This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Perhaps the most visible and longest-lasting symbol of the Confederacy, the battle flag, has begun to disappear. In the wake of the tragic shooting at a church in Charleston, lawmakers in South Carolina removed the flag from in front of the State House in Columbia, and the flag was lowered in Alabama as well. But other symbols remain in those two states and throughout the South, including North Carolina. Monuments, memorials, statues, plaques, all commemorating various aspects of that time nearly 150 years ago, dot the landscape. Some have been defaced in the wake of that shooting by those who see them as symbols of oppression. But there still remain people who view these remembrances as appropriate markers of our history. So this hour, we take a look at the South's Civil War monuments, at where they are, at who erected them and why, at what meaning they have for 21st century Americans, and at what should be their proper place in our modern world. Dr. David Goldfield is back with us. He is the Robert Lee Bailey Professor of History at UNC Charlotte and author of Still Fighting the Civil War, The American South, and Southern History. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Mike.
And Dr. Jeffrey B. Leek is Professor of English and Africana Studies at UNC Charlotte and the former director of the Center for the Study of the New South in the College of Arts and Sciences there. In that role, he organized a conference about or around the exhibit Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America, which is what brought you to this program the first time. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Doctors Goldfield and Leek are in our Spirit Square studio, and joining us by phone is Dr. Adam Dombey, an historian of the American South and the Civil War and Reconstruction at the College of Charleston, and co-developer of the Commemorative Landscapes of North Carolina project at UNC Chapel Hill. He joins us by phone from Charleston. Welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
First, there is no question that the Confederate battle flag is a point of controversy. It's viewed very differently by several groups of people, but that is in part because it was adopted as a symbol of hate at some point in its history. Can the same be said of monuments, plaques, statues, and memorials?
To some extent, because if you look at the history of the monuments when they were first mounted, you can see a direct connection between white supremacy, and particularly the landscape that we see in the South today is a reflection not so much of the Civil War as of the time in which those monuments were erected. Mm-hmm. Right after the Civil War, ladies' memorial associations began to erect monuments to the Civil War dead for the Confederacy. But the real push for monuments occurred during the 1890s and early 1900s, at a time when African Americans experienced the nadir of their civil rights in the South. Constitutions were changed to prohibit African Americans from voting. Lynchings spiked, and racial segregation by law became the law of the land in most Southern states. And it was during this time that the Confederate monuments were erected. The soldiers at the courthouse square, the memorials to the great leaders of the Confederacy, such as exist on Monument Avenue in Richmond today. And those were attempts by a new generation of white Southerners to reclaim their white supremacy from those who had given them the legacy of the war.
These, unlike the flag, which is red, white, and blue, and flaps in the breeze and has been used up close and personal to intimidate African Americans, particularly during the Civil Rights Movement and beyond, and also during Jim Crow, unlike the flag, these monuments are these gray pieces of stone or bronze statues that stand inert and kind of disappear in many cases into the landscape. There are hundreds of these around the countryside, even in North Carolina. Do African Americans see them as symbols of oppression, as symbols of white supremacy, or do they just not see them at all because nobody really sees them anymore?
Right. Well, it probably varies depending on where you are, depending on who you are, but they're certainly noticeable. Mm-hmm. And I think, no, it's not like the Confederate flag, but to David's point, it does reflect a certain mentality that created the monument. And when they're in public places, right, the question becomes, you know, how accurate are they? from an intellectual standpoint, right? You're claiming certain things, but it's maybe part of the story, but it's certainly not the whole story. So I'm not saying we need to do away with all of them, but we probably need to rehabilitate them, and certainly the myths associated with
them. We're going to talk about the accuracy as we go through this. But, you know, when the flag came down on the State House grounds, first it came down from on top of the dome. That was years ago. And then they placed it around a Confederate memorial. I didn't hear anybody say, now that we got the flag down, let's take this memorial down. Or while we're taking this down, why don't we get rid of this memorial? Why didn't we hear that?
Well, for me, at least, I'm reluctant to say just tear everything down, because that's a part of our history and culture. And so, you know, for example, full disclosure, Bree Newsom, the activist who climbed up the pole, she's a family member. Her grandmother and my mother were dear friends. So I've known her all her life. And what she did and what others have been reacting to, right, in terms of the flag coming down, there's this desire to do away with just this blatant racism and these notions of white supremacy. But we don't want to give the impression by removing a monument, removing a flag, that all is well. Right. And so I had an interesting conversation with my son yesterday on the way to summer camp at church. He's six. And he says, well, Dad, now that Bree has taken the flag down, because that's in his mind, does that mean white people like us now?
Ooh.
Now we're on our way.
Yeah.
We're traveling maybe 5 miles. Right. That's a deep question.
Yeah.
And so we had to quickly go through. Or I had to quickly come up with an answer that was both accurate, but, you know, I wanted to leave with a positive note. I wanted to leave a seed of positivity with him. And so I said, well, no, that doesn't mean all white people like black people, but there are white people who do. And we know lots of white people. And I had him name a few people and friends whom he knows, so that he would, you know, feel good, you know, at the end of the ride. But as I said, I'm reluctant to just try to embrace the idea that if we remove everything, right, all will be well.
Although the fact that you have to answer a six-year-old boy's question, a question like that, that to me settles the issue right there.
In 2015.
that settles the issue. Dr. Dombey, you were part of the Commemorative Landscapes of North Carolina project, which makes use of computer technology to give access to an enormous amount of information about a huge body of history, including these memorials and commemorative items. With this site that you created, you can ask a question about why a monument, any monument, not just a Civil War monument, why it exists, why it was placed where it was placed, and research the history of that. In the case of commemorations to people and events that were tied to the Confederacy, now that you've done all this research, is there really any question as to why they were erected?
I think not. I mean, I think we historians have come to a pretty conclusive view that there's many reasons for every monument to be built, but key among those reasons for the Confederate monuments, especially those built after 1890, I would say 1895, you can pick your date, the rise of Jim Crow is intrinsically linked. And when you said earlier that you don't see these monuments anymore on the landscape, they just sort of blend in, the people who put these monuments up would be very upset to hear that. They probably rolled over in their grave right then because they really wanted these monuments to be seen. And if you read the dedication speeches, which many of the monuments we have links to, on the website, and I think you have links on the on the WFAE website. You put a link to the website. Encourage listeners to look at it themselves, and they can explore individual monuments that interest them and the documents about them that we were able to digitize for them to read. You see over and over again, these monuments are being linked to the rise of white supremacy, the rise of white power and control over Southern politics. And when they move from putting them in front of cemeteries to putting them in front of state buildings, like courthouses and the Capitol, they're doing it for a reason. That reason is to tell a narrative, a very biased narrative, one that redeems the Confederate soldier from defeat and turns them into a victor. And again in the speeches given at these dedications, they mention how both during the war and after the war, the Confederate soldiers remained loyal to their race. Over again and again, you see that they were fighting for their race and that they want the next generation to see these monuments and to take pride in being white and to know that whites should be in charge. And to have that marker that is supposed to impart that message and frequently does in their inscriptions as well in front of a state building, which we want to welcome everyone to, is problematic, obviously.
Now, Dr. Dombey has said that these symbols were symbols of white supremacy, and he also said in something he wrote that they were expressions of what the originators felt was the correct order of things, which meant white control over everything. Should we, Dr. Goldfield, should we fault our ancestors for feeling that way? It was a different time, different sensibility. We look at that now as being incredibly wrong, but at the time it was incredibly right. Should we fault them for that?
I think if you had taken a survey of Americans, North and South, in the 1860s, for example, right at the beginning of the Civil War, you would have found that about 98% of the white population believed in the principles of white supremacy. Even Abraham Lincoln said pretty much the same thing during the Lincoln-Douglas debates of 1858. But the problem with the monuments is that it's more myth than fact. They are promoting a history that really, for the most part, does not exist. And secondly, it is a symbol of control of public space.
Were they, as Dr. Dombey, I want to hear from you on this too, and maybe Jeffrey Leake, I'm not sure you have an opinion on this, but were they simply trying to salve the wounds of being a defeated nation and try to regain some sense of stature in the world because they had been a defeated nation? Or were they really trying to just say, look, we're not taking all this stuff from Republican governments in the North who want to put in reconstructive governments, etc. We're going to take back what's ours. We're going to take back our country. It sounds familiar, doesn't it?
This was called redemption, and the religious symbolism is very important. From the perspective of white Southerners erecting these monuments and memorials, these were not only monuments and memorials to the Confederate dead. They were also monuments and memorials to themselves and the future of the South as a white republic.
Mm-hmm. So how do you – go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Dombey.
I think one of the things about when you're studying monuments that I've learned in my studies of monuments – is that when you look at a monument, you really can learn more about the time the monument's dedicated than you can about what it nominally commemorates. Though it supposedly commemorates the Civil War, it is as much about the 1890s and turn of the century and the power struggles going on there. And it's a celebration that though the Confederacy may have lost the war, they won the issues in the minds of those who are putting up the monuments. And they're very explicit about that, that they are celebrating the fact that even though they may have lost the war, the proper order of things, as they would call it, is back in place finally.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk about how you deal as historians with changing social mores. What do we do about the past? It's gone. But what do we do about it? And are there things that we are doing today that 150 years from now people will say, what were they thinking? It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Chesterbrook Academy, preparing children academically, socially, and emotionally for elementary school, hosting an open house on Saturday. Details at chesterbrookacademy.com. You probably remember Webb Hubble. He's a former Associate Attorney General of the United States, longtime friend of Bill and Hillary Clinton. He was, as you recall, swept up in the Kenstar Whitewater investigation during the Clinton administration. And after pleading guilty to federal wire and tax fraud charges, he served time in prison. Well, he now lives in Charlotte. He's also published several novels now. And a little while ago, we sat down and talked about his first novel, which has nothing whatsoever to do with the Clinton administration. It is a legal thriller. and a pretty good one, as a matter of fact. We had that conversation, I think, about this time last year, and we'll hear that conversation again tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, secretly recorded videos reopen the fight over federal funding for Planned Parenthood. New hurdles for the organization, the political response, and the latest in the battle over abortion rights in the U.S.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins, on listener-funded public radio, where 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHA. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about Confederate memorials as they exist throughout the South and here in North Carolina with Dr. David Goldfield, Robert Lee Bailey, professor of history at UNC Charlotte, and author of Still Fighting, the Civil War, the American South and Southern History. Dr. Jeffrey Leake is a professor of English and Africana Studies at UNC Charlotte, who organized Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America. And Dr. Adam Dombey, who's an associate professor of history at the College of Charleston, and who co-developed Commemorative Landscapes of North Carolina, a project out of UNC Chapel Hill, some of the pictures from which you can see on our website at wfae.org/charlottetalks. I think there's also a link there to their website. And we want to know from people listening through social media and email, do you believe that Confederate monuments and memorials should be preserved, or should they be removed from public lands and buildings? You can let us know. How have we traditionally dealt in the past with changing social mores? There are things all over the world that have been memorialized through monuments and statues that we look at today and go, So what do we do about that? What should we do? What should we do about that?
Well, in terms of, and this is really following up on what Adam was saying about how these monuments really give us not so much insight into the event that they're celebrating, but the mindset of people then at that time. And that's important. And we all, each generation, we would hope, learns from previous generations. And so this is really, unfortunately, it was spurred on by the massacre in Charleston. Mm-hmm. But this is really a time where, you know, we often use the phrase teachable moments. This is really an opportunity for us in the South in particular to really set about in our schools, in our cultural institutions, in our governments, telling at least a more truthful and accurate story about our story in the South, our history.
Are these monuments, then, teachable moments?
I think they can be. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have controversy, right? You're going to have that, but we can use them to introduce students and others to what really was going on at that particular time.
There are ways you can use the monuments to teach from, which is why I would not advocate removing all the memorials and monuments, assuming you had the logistical ideas that would do that. Because when you bury history, it tends to fester, and it tends to develop even more myths on top of the other myths. So what you can do, look at the city of Richmond, for example, Monument Avenue with a beautiful equestrian statue of Robert E. Lee with the statues of Stonewall Jackson and Jefferson Davis. At the end of Monument Avenue today is the statue of Arthur Ashe, an African-American native son who became one of the greatest tennis players of all time. That's one way to deal with it, build another statue.
Is that illustrative of progress?
Oh, very definitely, because the Civil War monuments, what they're saying is that black people don't matter. Talk about black lives don't matter. Black past doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That's what those monuments are saying. The inclusion of Arthur Ashe on Monument Avenue means that the city of Richmond is now open to people of all colors.
When Dr. Goldfield was on this program in the aftermath of the flag coming down in South Carolina with several other people, and we talked about how the flag has been misused over time and how it's been was adopted, and part of the problem with the flag is that it was adopted and successfully adopted by people who wanted to put it in the face of African Americans that they don't matter, that white supremacy is the way it should be, and it became a symbol of hate. I'm not sure that these monuments have become such symbols of hate as the flag has. But part of that discussion, Dr. Dombey, centered around the fact that people refused to believe the causes of the Civil War had anything to do with slavery. It was about heritage. It was about states' rights. It was about honor and valor on the battlefield, etc. Do these symbols, these memorials, really help us at all understand the real original intent, or is it all buried in nonsense?
Well, I think the monuments tell a version of the past that is so skewed, it needs at the very least reinterpretation. I mean, and let's be straight about this. The cause of the Civil War was slavery. There is really no way around it. When people say it's about states' rights, my first question to my students when they say that is, a states' rights to what? If you look at the Articles of Secession, it's very clear that slavery is why South Carolina tries to leave the Union. Why North Carolina tries to leave the Union.
All of them.
All of the states that try to leave the Union. That's why. The vice president of the Confederacy says, the Confederacy's foundations are laid, its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination of the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. That's a direct quote from the vice president of the Confederacy saying why he thinks we need the Confederacy. So you can't get more official than that. But these monuments are definitely twisting it. And
well, does that help perpetuate the myth? Does it help people not only justify their belief that it was about states' rights and about honor, and can they point to these monuments and say, well, look, it's inscribed on the plaque. It must be true.
And that's why a reinterpretation of these monuments requires more than just teaching in the classroom, although that's part of it.
Right.
You need at least an interpretive plaque next to it to describe the history of each of these monuments, what was said when they were put up, how they relate historically to the larger movement to disenfranchise African Americans.
There would be people who said, if you put a plaque next to a plaque, if you put a new plaque next to the old plaque, interpreting the old plaque, that would be, Dr. Goldfield, revisionist history.
Of course it's revisionist history. It's revising history to where it should be, where the overwhelming consensus of historians would agree that slavery caused the Civil War. And I think other than erecting another statue, which would be very expensive, I think the idea of having an explanatory plaque next to these memorials would accomplish two things. First, it would be an opportunity for communities to come together and discuss this issue all over the South. And secondly, it will help to not end, but mitigate the myth that somehow states' rights or the tariff or economic reasons were the cause of the Civil War.
But you were part of that conversation, and you heard from the gentleman from the Sons of Confederate Veterans who just simply does not believe and will not believe that the causes of the Civil War were slavery. He won't believe it. So even if you revise history and put a plaque next to the old plaque saying this is the truth, they're not going to believe it.
Oh, sure. There are people who believe that the world is flat. There are people who believe that we're going to be annihilated on December 22nd, 2018. You're not going to reach those people. And historians, quite honestly, have not done a very good job in educating the public about this. So we need public history. We need museums. We need plaques. We need other avenues to get the message across.
Except for Monument Avenue in Richmond and Stone Mountain in Georgia, which I think also has these enormous carvings of Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, a lot of these monuments are pretty much invisible. I didn't know that there was a Confederate monument, for instance, on the City Hall grounds here in Charlotte. Had no idea until it was defaced and it became part of the news cycle. Would it be best to just leave these things alone and ignore them?
No. And David pointed out earlier, he said that when you do that, you know, when you attempt to bury history, it festers and it comes out in other kinds of ways that are usually socially disruptive and non-productive. So the longer you deny something like our true history related to slavery and the Civil War, the more it's going to come out in the worst kinds of ways. For example, Dylann Roof, the shooter in Charleston. And you've heard it with an African-American president, right? Some people may call them microaggressions against African-Americans during the age or in the age of Obama, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, almost every week, every 2 weeks, we're hearing about a law enforcement person who's killing a black man or woman. And in none of these instances, I don't think, have the victims even had a weapon, right? And so there's this festering aggressiveness on the part of some white law enforcement people and others because they don't like the fact that we have a black president and they feel like their country is being taken over, their country. And so that's part of the flag issue, the monument issues. And so if we don't address them, and let's just think about future generations, right? We all want our kids, our grandkids, just future generations to have a more peaceful, right, and harmonious existence. We deny this now. I mean, that's the only, if you want to use the word positive, thing that has come from the Charleston massacre is that at least it's pushed people in white and black communities in the South to try to go beyond artifice. Mm. Hey, how you doing? I'm good. Mm-mm. No, because we're not, clearly, right? I mean, individually, we may be here and there, but in order for that young man to have gone into a church at a prayer meeting
right.
and done what he did, there's something...
Something's very wrong.
Right.
The Commemorative Landscapes Project, Dr. Dombey, that you helped put together, catalogs all of these monuments, not just Civil War or Confederate memorials and monuments, but all of them scattered around the state. How many of them are dedicated to the Civil War?
That's a really hard question to answer because we don't actually... We haven't finished cataloging them all. We keep finding more. Every time I think I'm done, we find another one. We do know that there are over 130 Civil War monuments in North Carolina, at least. And part of the problem is they keep adding new ones. In the last couple of years, the most recent Civil War one that I know of was placed in 2013. The earliest one is 1866. So you have this span, and they keep getting more, and we keep finding them. Because, as you pointed out, they do disappear into the landscape frequently. They get moved.
How many of them are front and center, or so to speak, in your face, and how many of them are largely forgotten and invisible? Is there a ratio?
It's hard to say, to be honest. I can say that of the original sort of set that were created before 1930, after 1895, most of the monuments they put up were put up in a way that they were supposed to be front and center. Before that point, before 1885 or 1895, depending on which state you're in, North Carolina, it's a little later, they tended to be in cemeteries and more funerary. But now they've been placed as we go on. So they may not be as front and center as they once were, but they were meant to be.
Given that they started as cemetery, they were monuments over graves, sometimes mass graves. I know that there's one that's a mound. It's a burial mound of Confederate soldiers, and there's a monument on top of it. Was that monument, is it safe to say that that monument and others like it were true expressions of grief and sorrow and appreciation for the men who gave their lives fighting for a cause, or was it a way to say the cause is right?
I think it's both. I think, depending on when you're looking at it, if you look at the Mecklenburg County Confederate Monument that's in the cemetery, it doesn't say explicitly that it's about the cause. It's about the dead, it says. But if you look at the speech that was given in 1887 mm-hmm. by then Senator Vance, who was also the governor of the state multiple times. He makes it very clear that the Confederates have made themselves right, or they've abided by their beliefs even after the defeat. And so when you read his speech, there's a clear political sense that he is imparting upon that monument and expects it to be used that celebrates the Confederacy and its causes.
And a good teachable moment related to that is we have a high school, Vance High School, right. named after him. So that's incredibly problematic,
right.
but it's a way to engage in this deeper conversation about
That gets down a slippery slope. There was a situation in New Orleans about a decade ago where they actually changed the name of George Washington Elementary School to Charles Drew, the African-American who founded Plaza. Certainly a very, very important person in medicine. But because George Washington was a slaveholder, are we only going to name schools and other public buildings after people who are saints, then we might as well just name every public building St. Francis of Assisi and be done with it.
Let's talk about a second for about the monument at near or on the campus at UNC Chapel Hill, Silent Sam, which was recently defaced. And there have been arguments for and against keeping that monument. But during the dedication of that statue, an industrialist by the name of Julian Carr lauded Confederate soldiers and celebrated the disenfranchisement of African Americans. He said, 100 yards from where we stand, less than 90 days perhaps after my return from Appomattox, I horsewhipped a Negro wench until her skirts hung in shreds, because upon the streets of this quiet village she had publicly insulted and maligned a Southern lady. Now that's at the dedication. In 1913, not 1868, 1913. And it is that an argument for taking it down?
I think it's definitely an argument for some context to be given on that monument. There's no context currently given in front of which we call Silent Sam, which is it's a very strange name to be given to a monument that is supposed to be very vocal. And Carr, who was the president at the time, or the division commander of the North Carolina United Confederate Veterans, this is not a fringe guy speaking. This is the guy who North Carolina veterans voted to represent them, really wanted it clear to students who were going to go to UNC, and this is where it gets problematic, to take pride in their race and to take pride in the fact that because of the actions during Reconstruction, specifically, of whites against African Americans, violence against them, whites were back in charge. Or as he put it, the bottom rail was no longer on top.
One Twitter contributor who identified himself as a UNC Charlotte, a UNC Chapel Hill student, says the statue is shameful and that UNC knows it, that it must go, and the statue erected honoring the slave woman Silent Sam says he whipped might be erected instead. Is that something we should do in 15 seconds or less?
Probably not, but I think an explanatory plaque would be very helpful.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of our discussion in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carolina Neurosurgery and Spine Associates, making a difference for patients with brain and spine disorders for 75 years. With 45 specialists and 9 offices in the Charlotte and the Triad regions, CNSA.com. Secretly recorded videos have reopened the fight over federal funding for Planned Parenthood. And on the Diane Rehm Show today in 20 minutes, they examine new hurdles for the organization, the political response, and the latest in the battle over abortion rights in the United States. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation about Confederate memorials, we'll try to squeeze you in. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Cubans raised their flag at the renamed embassy in Washington, D.C., but it will be a few more weeks before Secretary...
It's your community. We help you understand it.
Bicyclist Dean Broadhag and his friend are out for a leisurely ride along the Little Sugar Creek Greenway just east of Uptown.
It's a hot day, and we're just...
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Confederate memorials throughout the state, when they were erected, why they were erected, what the real story is behind many of these memorials, and what how we should view them in a modern context. With Dr. David Goldfield, Robert Lee Bailey, professor of history at UNC Charlotte and author of Still Fighting the Civil War, the American South and Southern History. Dr. Jeffrey B. Leake is a professor of English and Africana Studies at UNC Charlotte, who organized Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America. And Dr. Adam Dombey is assistant professor of history at the College of Charleston and co-developer of the Commemorative Landscapes of North Carolina project, which catalogs monuments, not just Civil War monuments, but all monuments and memorials throughout the state. Ben on Facebook writes, "The point has been made that in Berlin, the monuments honor the Jews who were terrorized and slaughtered by the Nazis. In America's South, the monuments honor the Confederates who fought to preserve a barbaric institution of slavery. Southern states should remove these disgraceful monuments from all public lands." You know, it is curious that we allow the United States of America, who won the war, allows the Confederate flag to be displayed over state capitals. It allows it to be displayed over in public places, has traditionally allowed that, has allowed the erection of these memorials and monuments to Southern soldiers who killed Northern soldiers in a war that the North won and that the United States won. What does that say about us as a nation, that we allow this?
It says that we are a free nation, that we believe in the right of free speech, and it's okay to honor our ancestors, but we do not have to embrace their faults, which is where we are today.
There was a story yesterday on the news in which two Confederate flags were removed from a house, a private home, while the owner was gone. And there was an interview with the owner talking about how disgraceful it was that he couldn't fly the Confederate flag on his own property, etc. And in the background was an American flag flying from his house. And he was wearing a fabric on his head that was an American flag. How do you explain the diametric juxtaposition of an American flag, the victory flag, the victor's flag, versus the memorial, the Confederate flag?
It's interesting. When we went to war in the Spanish-American War in 1898, the largest number of recruits and the most enthusiastic response was from Southerners, many of whom were the sons of Confederate veterans. There really isn't a contradiction between being an American and being a supporter of the Confederate States of America.
Okay. This is something we've been struggling with in the South, and certainly the flag has been a struggle, and now these memorials have become a topic of conversation. We're struggling in North Carolina with memorials. We're struggling with the Confederate flag on license plates. Neither the governor nor the legislature want to tackle this issue of license plates that bear the image of the Confederate flag. But recently, Governor Pat McCrory signed into law a bill that bans removing Confederate and other monuments without the permission of the General Assembly. Colin Campbell is a reporter with the Raleigh News and Observer who has been covering that story as it unfolded, and he joins us for a few minutes to fill us in. Welcome, Colin. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The bill that Governor McCrory signed requiring the legislature's permission to remove memorials is called the Cultural History Artifact Management and Patriotism Act, or the Heritage Act. Wow. It started its way through the legislature before the church shootings in Charleston. What was the impetus for this bill's origination?
Well, this bill was sponsored by Senator Dan Suchek, who's a Republican from up in the Boone area, and he was not looking at the Confederate monument issue, at least how he describes it when he filed this back in February. This bill does a number of things related to flag etiquette and proper flag disposal on state property. This is just a couple of paragraphs deep into the bill that represents how
monuments can be handled should there be a desire to remove a monument or move it from a place that is prominent and perhaps to a place that does not have the same level of prominence in a community, and then preventing a local government, county, city, from doing that on their own property without getting some sort of legislative approval and a piece of legislation to go through the North Carolina General Assembly. So he says the Confederate debate that we're having today has nothing to do with that, because that really wasn't at the forefront of what we were talking about back in February. And indeed, when this bill went through the state Senate in April, it passed unanimously. Every Democrat in the chamber voted for it, and there was really no discussion. But when this came up a few weeks after the Charleston shootings, the tone of the debate was very, very different and became very, very emotional.
But was there a reason, was there a trigger event that caused this legislator, this senator, to propose this bill? To write, to draw up the legislation and push it through the legislature?
No, his explanation is that he felt like there needed to be a more concrete process for removal of a monument than was what was currently on the books, and that was his only reason. He says there was no specific incident that he cited in his reasoning.
So the bill passed unanimously in the Senate in April before the church shootings in Charleston, but it came to a vote in the House shortly after the shootings there, something that at least one House member, Garland Pierce, a Scotland County Democrat, told the Speaker was disrespectful. But the House still went on and passed this bill 70-39. That would indicate that the shootings in Charleston played no role in the debate, but you just said that there was controversy during that debate. Why then didn't the shootings in Charleston have the same impact on our legislature as they had on the South Carolina legislature?
Well, I think there's a sense that with the Confederate monuments, it's a slightly different matter than, you know, whether a Confederate flag flies in front of your state house. So the Republicans here were not interested in any efforts that might occur to remove Confederate monuments. And of course, we have a number of Confederate monuments around the state capitol here in Raleigh. So what we saw here in the House was a very partisan split at the end of the debate. You know, Democrats felt like local government should keep that power, particularly on their own property, to determine what monuments stay or go. The Republicans felt like an issue that big of a historic monument coming down ought to be a matter for the state to decide. So it almost came down to, particularly for the Republicans, more of a matter of control and whether the state should be in charge of this whole issue statewide.
Yeah, control is a key thing here, I think, and we need to talk in just a second about that. But it takes control away from local governments. It seeks seeking to move or remove any monuments from their property, and the governor criticized the bill for that, and yet he signed it.
Yeah, he signed it.
Why?
He says, you know, we need to preserve our heritage, and he kind of gave a very vague explanation in the news release he sent out when he signed the bill, but he did say he was concerned by the fact that the bill does take away the power for a county or a city government to have control over a monument that's on their property. And that would mean, you know, a lot of the communities where this debate's happening. I know Mecklenburg County has been discussing the fate of some monuments on county property there. The county commissioners there will no longer have that power to make that decision. They're going to have to ask their state legislators should they want to remove the monument to pass a statewide bill.
The legislature is building a track record of doing things like this. They're taking away local control over many different things. Waterworks, they've attempted to take the airport away from Charlotte's control. They have gotten themselves involved in Greensboro City Council elections by redistricting the city council districts there. Is this just another example of that, or is there more to it than that? Is it really about the memorials, or is it about this legislature taking away local control?
You know, I get the sense that it's both. Obviously, like you say, that there's been a trend of the state sort of taking control, and there was a very poignant remark, I believe, from Representative George Cleveland, who's from the Jacksonville area, who said that he felt like the cities and counties are creations of the state, and the state, in his mind, I think he said, should be able to play with the city and county's property if they so choose. So there's that element of it, but there's also a lot of emotions wrapped up in Confederate history and heritage in this state. At one point, a Democratic senator happens to be black, or a representative happens to be black, got up and said he felt like Confederate soldiers and veterans did not deserve the same respect as veterans from other wars. He felt like they were traitors to the country because they fought against the Union, and that provoked a very angry response from some of the Republicans in the House, who jumped up and actually tried to sort of shout him down and cut him off, saying his remarks were being disrespectful. So there's that element there as well, and I think both of these have sort of become intertwined in this particular piece of legislation.
Just another example of how complicated this all is. Colin Campbell is a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. Colin, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
As we've been talking, we've gotten a lot of comments on Facebook, as you might imagine, and Twitter. One of them says, your experts make it sound like all Confederate memorials espoused white supremacy. The memorial in Salisbury says no such thing. It's simply for Rouen's war dead. I do recognize that slavery was the cause of the war, but do we deny the people who died because their state called them? Tolerance and acceptance is a saloon door, sir. It swings both ways.
The thing we have to keep in mind is that many of these soldiers who fought and died for the Confederate States of America fought and died to protect their homes and families. Many of them were not slaveholders. But it's also important to keep in mind that the larger cause for which they fought was the cause of protecting the institution of slavery and extending it. So it's difficult to separate these memorials, regardless of what they say, from the overall cause of slavery.
Jerry emails, isn't the bigger problem with the Confederacy the fact that it was a treasonous rebellion? Confederates were terrorists that should not be honored by patriots. I think the frame of racism while there is superseded by treason.
The Confederacy, Confederate leaders would say, look, we're not attacking the United States, we're just withdrawing. We are the true Americans because we are following the Constitution. You have in Washington a sectional party, a party dedicated to our destruction because they're going to go after the institution of slavery. So we just want to be left alone. We want to declare our independence. We are not traitors. We are upholders of the Constitution. That was their argument.
Okay.
Right. And in microcosm, what these Facebook comments reflect is that, you know, in any family, you have disagreements, intense disagreements, and we're not going to all come to the same conclusions with regard to Confederate monuments, the Civil War, or even how to honor those who were killed during it. But it's important for both sides, or all sides, because there's often more than two, to be heard, right? And we have to honor where people stand or sit in terms of their beliefs. But when there's clear evidence that what they're espousing isn't the full story, we need to be forthright and honest in articulating that.
Again, when Governor McCrory signed this heritage bill into law recently, he said that our monuments and memorials remind us of North Carolina's complete story. The protection of our heritage is a matter of statewide significance to ensure that our rich history will always be preserved and remembered for generations to come. Do these memorials and monuments remind us of our complete story, to use the governor's words?
Absolutely not. It's an incomplete story. Not only is it incomplete, but a good deal of it is incorrect. And we definitely need something to make the story whole. You're never going to tell the whole story, but it's possible to make the story whole.
Grady on Twitter is bringing up a question which I was going to bring up as well. ISIS is destroying monuments across the Middle East. The Taliban destroyed historic 1,000-year-old artifacts and monuments in Iraq. Is that what we have become? Would the removal of these monuments or altering them in some way be the alteration of history? Because the fact that they were erected by the people who put them up and said the things about white supremacy that they said and said the things about the great cause that they said, that's part of our history.
Yeah, and I think it should remain part of our history, but it should be qualified.
Dr. Dombey, I want to hear from you on that as well.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would ever call for them to be destroyed. There are some excellent examples of artwork. These were expensive pieces of artwork, and they are an important message. I think in Hungary, there's an excellent example we can look at. There's a park there called Memento Park, in which monuments torn down after the end of the communist regime in 1989, they gathered them all up and placed them there together. And so you visit this park and you see, I'm not sure how many, but numerous monuments, and you learn about the history of Hungary and the communist period and how sculpture was used to legitimize a dictatorship. So it's preserving the examples of art and the memory of how art has been used to legitimize a ruling class and cement their rule.
Right. If we think in North Carolina that we have a problem, imagine how you'd feel if we were having this conversation in the state of Georgia, because the Atlanta branch of the NAACP is calling for the immediate removal of all Confederate symbols from Stone Mountain Park, and they point to the carving of Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and Jefferson Davis on the side of Stone Mountain, which is larger than the carvings on Mount Rushmore. They called it a false representation of the Confederacy, which it probably is. Now, it's unclear that they would advocate the destruction of the carvings on Stone Mountain, but what do you do about that?
Well, you did in 1996, the Olympic Games were held in Atlanta, and the concluding moment was that great American composer Ludwig von Beethoven's Ode to Joy, concluding the Atlanta Olympics. And as they as the Symphony No. 9 reaches a climax, they projected Martin Luther King Jr.'s hologram on top of Stone Mountain. And this is one way to deal
with
it.
That's the position. In 10 seconds, is it a good thing that we're having these conversations?
Oh, it's essential. And this should be just the beginning. And for those of us in the classrooms, we need to double down and do our best to let people know the full story.
Dr. Jeffrey Leek is a professor of English and Africana Studies at UNC Charlotte. Dr. Adam Dombey joins us from Charleston, where he's an assistant professor of history and the co-developer of the Commemorative Landscapes of North Carolina Project. And Dr. David Coldfield from UNC Charlotte, author of Still Fighting the Civil War.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.